for an entire generation, people have experienced Star Wars the only way it's been possible, on the TV screen. But if you've only seen it this way, you haven't seen it at all.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
We've been waiting for you.
The Force is strong here, even stronger than the coffee.
Hi, this is Jim Lucino, and you're listening to Coffee with Kenobi, Dan Z, and Corey Club, and this is the podcast you're looking for.
We're happy to welcome best-selling author Jim Lucino to Coffee with Kenobi. Jim is the author of the upcoming Tarkin, the incredible new novel that will answer a lot of questions Star Wars fans have been wondering for years. The book also gives tremendous insight into the psyche of Grand Moff Tarkin and how he became the iconic villain we have been intrigued by since Peter Cushing portrayed him in the original Star Wars. We are honored to discuss Tarkin with Jim Lucino and to share a cup of coffee with him. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you.
Thank
Good
you.
Good talking to you guys.
Yeah, you as well. We appreciate your efforts trying to set up our little holocron here to connect to you, and here we are. So
sunspots.
That's right. That's exactly right. You know, it's, of course, Tarkin knows a little bit about that. So if you could for us, describe how you felt when you first discovered you're going to be able to provide the authoritative canonical background for Tarkin, and what kind of challenges did you face?
Well, when the idea was pitched to me last summer, I was actually trying to come up with another novel that would focus more on the Emperor. But I wasn't getting anywhere. I wanted to sort of take the, move things forward from Dark Plagueis. So when Tarkin came along, I thought, well, I realized that the novel has to focus on Tarkin, but if there was a way to set it early enough in the Imperial era that I might be able to push things forward with both the Emperor and Vader, and still have the book focus on Tarkin. Then, of course, I realized what I was facing, having to come up with an entire background for this character. And fortunately, he's been on my mind ever since I saw the movie some, 30 years ago. So I was pretty excited. I worried a little bit initially that Tarkin wasn't going to be a figure that would resonate with a lot of casual readers. Only because while he's certainly recognizable, he's a character from a film that's, pretty old now. And I wondered whether people would be interested in reading background on a character like that. But as I got into it, I started to discover things, and as ever with these novels, it became a delight, even when it was challenging.
And is there that added pressure, like you said, of coming up with a background for this iconic character, and just how do you kind of get into his head so well?
That's a difficult process to describe. I will tell you that in the story meetings that I had at Lucasfilm and early discussions about the character, we sort of came to an agreement that he should be a colonial rather than, he is a cultured person in the film. It's clear that he has a sense of entitlement and he seems to be very dignified and intelligent. But when the suggestion was made that he be a colonial, it gave me a whole new take on where this character came from, what made him. I have done a lot of traveling in East Africa, and I started to remember a lot of characters that I'd met, who had been colonials, had been raised in Kenya, raised in Tanzania, and I just used those characters as a jumping off point for Tarkin.
Well, certainly shows in your writing and how you've written him. And I'm curious to know, too, as you input all this background information and kind of build the story along, how much does Lucasfilm and the story group have as input, and how does that process work?
It's really pretty casual. I mean, they simply pitched the idea to me. And from that point on, and this has been the case with all the sort of collaborative brainstorming I've done at Lucasfilm over the years, we just basically talk. We talk about the character. I came in with a kind of a rough idea of the story I wanted to tell and when I wanted to set the story. And that just touched off all sorts of discussions that went all over the place, you know, past, present, future. When I came out of the meeting, you know, there was nothing that the story group wanted me to do. There's nothing that they steered me away from tackling. So I just went back and thought for a couple of months and came up with an outline. And in the outline process, there's a little bit more give and take, but it's a very, very, it was a very comfortable experience working with them.
And was it mostly a lot of conference calls, or did you get to go to Lucasfilm for this sort of a thing?
Yeah, I was out at Lucasfilm for the initial story meeting when we sort of discussed a lot of things that are going on with Rebels. And at that point, even the Clone Wars bonus material hadn't been released, so we were talking about that a little bit. From that point on, we did everything by text or by email.
So that's fascinating. And I think so many fans are just so intrigued by the whole story group concept. Have you noticed a difference in how you create a Star Wars novel with the story group versus before the story group was in place?
No, because really there's always been a story group. I mean, for every novel I've written for the franchise, I've been involved in these brainstorming sessions, and there's some new faces in this current iteration of the story group. But the process itself was no different. You know, we sit around a long table, and you know, we have coffee and donuts, and we talk Star Wars.
Sounds like us.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, it really is just a like I said, a brainstorming session where you just swap ideas, and there's a lot of, you know, enthusiasm on all sides, and it's not as harrowing as like a pitch meeting with a Hollywood studio. It's much more laid back than that.
Well, that's great. And speaking of laid back, I suppose it's arguable if Grand Moff Tarkin is laid back or not. But what is it about Tarkin that you find so appealing?
Well, from the start, I thought I just had so many questions in my mind that were running through my mind about Tarkin. I mean, here's this guy who, you know, Leia accuses of holding Vader's leash, who's got this dry wit, but you know, very emotionally destroys an entire planet. I just kept wondering who he was. Even to the point of, like, you know, was he on a first name basis with the Emperor? You know, there was just all these questions in my mind about where he came from. And, I had years and years to think about it. And it's just somewhat ironic that I finally, after all that time, had a chance to really dig deep and come up with some of these answers.
Well, it definitely shines through in the novel itself. And as we, you know, Dan and I both have had the pleasure of preview copies and be able to read it from the standpoint, and which we both really liked a lot. It was a lot of fun, and like you said, it just really dips into a lot of Tarkin, a lot of things we haven't seen yet. And I'm a writer myself, and I know it, to structure a novel and to go into, like you talked about, you know, going in and putting going into the layout and structuring your novel and putting together the character development and how that looks. I'm curious to know, you know, what's that the structure that, and that, how to blend that together in this type of book, because there's space battles, there's political intrigue, there's a military stratagem. How do you maintain that balance and still provide a detailed background of Tarkin's early years?
That was the really challenging part of this novel. And I have to tell you, I was really unsure of whether the approach that I was taking was going to work. For a while, I worried that, you know, who's going to care about all this, you know, all this background material? I would read it over and I'd wonder, is this going to be really boring? And then I started looking at the space battles and I thought, is this going to work? Because it seems so different than the rest of the novel. And honestly, I didn't really feel really confident about the novel until I handed it off to Del Rey and Lucasfilm and got the kind of feedback that you need to, you know, do a revision to tighten some things up, and maybe I added a couple of scenes. This was just really tricky because, you know, Tarkin's name is on the cover, which means it has to focus on him. But because I was only setting it in a specific point in time, you know, it wasn't an actual biography. I couldn't tell the story all the way to his death. I had to try and just keep it close to an origin tale that would, you know, hopefully suggest the kind of character we finally meet in A New Hope. So that was my goal. And I thought that if I structured a story that had some of these some action scenarios in it that would allow Tarkin to, well, that would bring out the kind of skill set that Tarkin has, that maybe the novel would work that way. So I still hope that it does. It
certainly does. I tell you what, I love the fact that you've taken a villain and made him into a, like, it's like a Bildungsroman novel where you get to see this coming of age of Tarkin and the way you kind of go in and out between his past and what shapes him into the present, which is, for those listeners who don't know, this book takes place 5 years after the events of Revenge of the Sith. Isn't that correct?
That's right.
Yes. Yeah. And so you've got these amazing things going on. Corey, you had a follow, right?
Yeah, I got a quick follow up. Just kind of a comment. You know, as you describe Tarkin's backstory, and it's obviously not neat and tailored as far as his outfit that he wears, but, you know, it's got a lot of background. And as I'm reading this, he's kind of like a mismatch of Sherlock Holmes and the Most Interesting Man in the World.
Yeah, and you know, that's, you know, part of that has to do with Peter Cushing.
Oh, definitely. Because
you know, he just owned that role. I mean, and so I kind of grew up with him. I you know, I don't know how many Hammer horror films I saw, you know, in my misspent youth. But he was a constant character that I, you know, an actor that I would come across constantly. So I wanted to sort of play with that a little bit. And I think it works for Tarkin. This sort of, you know, Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Frankenstein and all the other roles that Cushing played in his life.
Well, and definitely the tone through a lot of the novel has a bit of the macabre as far as when you look into the inner workings of Tarkin's psyche, I think, as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And one of my favorite things about this novel is we get to see an explanation of the burgeoning partnership between Darth Vader and Tarkin. So as a result of this, we see that Vader plays a much bigger role than many might have expected. While you have written the character of Vader before, how did you balance Tarkin's rank and keen mind with Vader's imposing presence and force prowess?
Well, that's the other aspect of Tarkin that always intrigued me, that you know, he calls Vader my friend in A New Hope. And that's a strange thing right there. You know, I mean, who is this guy? And he's friends with Vader. You know, I wanted to, this is only 5 years after, as you say, only 5 years after Revenge of the Sith. So I didn't want to show the Vader that we see in A New Hope. I wanted to show the Vader that's on the way to being that character. I don't mean to suggest that he still had, you know, some of Anakin Skywalker in him, or that he was still going through any kind of, you know, grief or pangs of guilt about one thing or another, but that he just wasn't the full machine that he seems to become later on in the saga. And that seemed to work well in terms of who Tarkin was, because the two kind of get to know each other by the way they handle the situations that I set up in the book. And I mean, I think there's still a reveal that can take place sometime later, maybe, you know, sometime before A New Hope, where some of Tarkin's guesswork about Vader actually comes to fruition. But I can leave that for someone else to flesh out.
Well, let's hope that Eric Schoenweiss and everyone else decides, well, we better give the reins back to Jim for that, because that's something I would certainly pay to read. And you know what? I've got to tell you, you did a marvelous job. And Star Wars fans, as you know, are so discerning, and they're very it's so critical to them to have the right voice for a character. And you have managed to take an iconic character like Darth Vader, arguably one of the most famous villains in all of fiction, period. And it does very much feel like he's removed from Revenge of the Sith, but he's nowhere near the guy that he is on A New Hope. So I certainly applaud you for that. I thought that was terrific.
Well, thanks. I mean, I think, you know, the thing about Vader is, I guess you picked up on this, is he doesn't have a point of view in the book. Because I think that's where you can get into trouble. I mean, I did use Tarkin as a point of view. I mean, Vader as a point of view character in Dark Lord.
Yes.
But again, I felt, you know, 5 years forward, that it would be very, very tricky to get into the mind of Vader. And I'm glad I didn't have to. I'm glad I could, you know, I was able to just stick with the point of view of the Emperor and Tarkin, and keep Tarkin guessing about what he was, you know, what Vader's reactions were. I mean, you're staring at somebody in a mask. I mean, you never really know what's going on behind that mask. So I think that worked okay as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things I like so well about it, is that we learn a lot about Vader, but yet we still don't really know much of anything. And that's got to be a challenge. I thought it was very well done.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm curious to see what Paul Kemp is going to do.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
with Vader, you know, because he certainly will be a point of view character in Lords of the Sith. So that should be really interesting.
I want to say, too, is, you know, much of these books have been coming out, and they're, you know, canonical as far as,
yeah,
you know, the books themselves, all the authors have been doing an excellent job of bringing us new content and fresh content too. So, kudos to you guys. I mean, just blowing us away. I think as much as Dan and I just enjoying these books so far, they're just well done so much.
Well, you know, it's cool, 'cause the Dark Times have never really been, been open to literature. And so there's a lot to explore in those decades that lead up to the film.
Well, you know, certainly this book, we mentioned, it's during the dark times, and you know, it revolves around a lot of questions. You know, it leaves off what is, you know, what Tarkin knows about. You know, he knows about Darth Vader, knows about Anakin Skywalker, their extermination of the Jedi, and so much more. This is something that, you know, Star Wars fans have been debating for years. Walk us through a little bit of the process of self-discovery for both you and Tarkin himself.
Well, a lot of that sort of stuff came out of the discussions that I had at Lucasfilm. That was, you know, we were sort of all asking ourselves, who knows what, when did they find out, exactly how much did they know? You know, it's clear by A New Hope that that Tarkin knows probably quite a bit of, you know, Vader's history. I mean, he certainly understands. He's not really surprised about Obi-Wan Kenobi being Vader's master. So there had to be something there. And we, you know, we finally decided, yeah, Tarkin probably has really strong suspicions about Vader. And that led to discussions about the Emperor as well. Like, if he knows about Vader, what are his what's he thinking about the Emperor? Where does he think the two of them fit together? So it was a back and forth process. I'm very thankful, very grateful that Lucasfilm, let me run with that and didn't object to anything that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. Because, it is, like you say, it's these are things that haven't come out yet.
Right. And I remember, especially at the end of the Clone Wars, before it went to Netflix, there was so much discussion, especially in the final arc with Ahsoka and where we get to see her fate, about how much Tarkin knows and how much Anakin sort of holds a grudge or how he looks at that. So you literally, when I was reading that part of the book, I mean, I think, and look, I don't get paid by Del Rey to say this kind of stuff. I'm just speaking from the heart because that's what we do here on Coffee with Kenobi. But when I read those sections, I thought, okay, this is the best Star Wars book I've ever read as far as fiction goes. And I think that's the kind of stuff I've been waiting to read for a long time. And the way you deliver it, I think people are going to get really excited. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of debate, but that's kind of the beauty of what Star Wars is.
Yeah, that was a happy little discovery on my part because I had missed those episodes of the Clone Wars.
Oh wow!
Those last three, those episodes about Ahsoka, and so when I was bringing myself back up to speed on everything, came to that story arc, it opened the whole book up for me because. There's this fantastic connection. It goes way beyond what Tarkin and Anakin Skywalker had in that earlier story arc about the Citadel. Suddenly there's something really personal here and something that I can really make use of. So I was thrilled.
Wow.
I saw those episodes.
What a prescient situation, really. That's pretty exciting. So let's talk a little bit about the Emperor. It's certainly alluded to that the Emperor seems to be cognizant of the inner workings of the Force and that it might take vengeance on his own plans. We also find out for the first time his ultimate endgame, which is incredibly chilling. How did this idea come to fruition?
Well, this is part of what I'm talking about when I was thinking about this, some way to move or to do some sort of a sequel around Darth Plagueis. I just have never been sure about what the Emperor really wants. There's been a lot of talk about immortality and all these other issues, but it's very nebulous in Star Wars. It's not like Game of Thrones where somebody gets to rule all the different kingdoms, and he's not like Sauron who's gathering the rings and wants ultimate power. Because in Tolkien you have this whole backstory of gods and demiurges and archangels and everything else, so there is a quest for some sort of ultimate power. But what does the Emperor really want? And I think that there's still plenty to explore there because there's a lot of years still between this book and A New Hope, and there's some great reversals that occur in A New Hope that have to really weigh on the Emperor and a lot that probably takes him by surprise. So I think there's room for another story arc, another novel that delves deeper into his real endgame.
Wow, you're just sprinkling a lot of. It's already like Halloween, and we're getting our candy early.
Yes,
that's awesome.
That's definitely exciting to hear. As things are coming out, and another part of this Tarkin book is. His great ship, which you describe as the Carrion Spike, one of the most powerful parts of it is literally the meaning of the Carrion Spike. Explore the powerful dynamics at play there.
Another happy accident that occurred when I was writing. It wasn't in my outline. It's one of those discoveries you make. I never knew how to really describe that process or how those things happen. You just sometimes when you know you're working on a novel, you don't really understand what you're doing, but pieces start to fit together, and you follow threads, and all of a sudden you're making discoveries that you had no idea about in the beginning of the book. So the Carrion Spike was one of those. I just had a vague notion in mind that, you know, that Tarkin would go through some sort of ultimate test on the plateau. But I didn't know early on that I was going to name his ship, after that test, and really didn't understand that final scene where he talks about his real initiation, his real trial. I just came out of left field. I don't know how to, I wish I could explain it.
Well, no, I mean, there's just a beautiful metaphor here through the whole Carrion Spike. And then, we fast forward to the present of the novel, and I really enjoy that. This is something where if I could take excerpts of this and show it to my high school students, we could explore the concept of a metaphor just through this journey that Tarkin takes. And I thought that was very enjoyable as well.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And, you know, it was gratifying to me because, as I say, it was a discovery. And a lot of times when you're writing books, you know, doing franchise work and things like that, where you have to, you're obliged to submit a pretty detailed outline so that just to make certain that, you know, everybody's on the same page, that, you know, the members of the story group or whatever understand, you know, where the writer is going. So that sometimes can take the fire out of the writing process. You know, when you've given that much thought to the outline, story's almost written in your mind. So when you make a discovery like that, then it's very invigorating.
Yeah, it's really electric, really electric. Go ahead, Corey.
Sure. You know, as we talked before, you've written Darth Plagueis, and you know, there's a presence felt there. We get to see his droid 11-4D in the novel. How much of this information implies, that your previous novel may be some canon to it rather than the legend?
I wish there was a simple answer for that.
Sure.
That's really not up to me. You know, I included things in the book and sort of left it up to the editorial process as to what was going to remain.
Mm-hmm.
Very little was taken out. In fact, nothing was taken out. There was some suggestion made about changing the species of certain characters and, you know, adding some scenes, just beefing up certain parts of the book. But things like... a reference to the droid or some of the other references are dropped in there. I don't know what they mean in terms of, you know, yes, that droid is canon.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that, you know, retroactively makes other things canon, it's just not my call. You know,
right.
So I don't know. It's kind of a process that's being worked through now, and I'm not privy to how that's going to happen.
Sure, and that really makes sense because it just tells me that while some people may think, oh, everything in Darth Plagueis is canon, what we know for sure is that, as Dave Filoni promised us when we first heard about the story group and the shift from the expanding universe to legend, is that they were going to mine everything that was in the Legends books and bring them in. So this is just, again, them showing, hey, we promised the fans we would do this. We're doing it. And again, it's a nice organic process that I think is very freeing for a writer and also probably very empowering.
Yeah. And, you know, going forward, it's going to be interesting because, well, with the sequels that are coming with F7, the things I'm hearing about it, with rumors or not, I mean, a lot, that movie sounds like it's going to be very interesting, and it is going to be very different than the way we've all thought of that 30-year period following Return of the Jedi. But it's almost like sort of having cognitive dissonance. Like, I think I'm excited about the new movie, but I also think back on Tim Zahn's books and some of the other books, and they're not lessened. I still enjoy having that stuff in my head. So maybe there's a way where you can just enjoy, you know, two versions of certain events. I don't know how it's going to work, but I don't think that any of the past material is necessarily going to be diminished by what follows.
Very well said, and I think you're putting a lot of fans at ease hearing someone of your caliber say that sort of thing, because I agree. I mean, in the title Legends itself, as many people have talked about, as was discussed at San Diego Comic-Con, a legend is quite quite a term of endearment. I mean, the best thing you can think of, best example would be King Arthur, and all of his stories are legend, right. But they all have right. that weight to them, that gravitas.
Right. Yeah, I remember reading, you know, like several versions of The Grail Quest, and I liked all of them.
Absolutely. Even Steinbeck has a version that's really good.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, and it's sort of, you can kind of embrace all of them. You know, and I think, you know, ultimately, I think the fans are going to decide the storyline. You know, it may take years before everything shakes out, but ultimately, it's going to be the readers and everybody else who decides how the saga really unfolds.
Right, and what a great time it is, as we say so much on Coffee with Kenobi, to be a Star Wars fan. And speaking of great times in Star Wars, we certainly can't have you on without saying the word Sheev. So, you knew that was coming. So, Sheev sets the internet ablaze. So, how did you come up with this name, and how did you react to this outpouring of reaction to this?
Okay, well, first of all, I did not come up with the name. That is George Lucas's creation.
Oh, wow.
I think I knew
the
that.
The story that I was told, was that it was going to be used in the live-action television series. I think it was going to be called Underworld.
Yes.
You know, when that series just wasn't picked up, or they decided not to move forward with it. So that name has been around for a while. I suspect that George had it much earlier. And, you know, I thought... when I was told, I thought, well, this is interesting. Here's some real canon coming right from George Lucas. And so when there was all this blowback about the name, I was sort of surprised. I mean, first of all, we all knew that, you know, Palpatine had a given name. I actually, in Darth Plagueis, in an earlier version of Darth Plagueis, I actually had Plagueis, he claimed that he found out Palpatine's first name, but he never used it as a way of kind of catering to Palpatine's ego. Mm. But he never made use of that first name. And, you know, on Palpatine's part, the fact that he certain people are on a first name basis with him, it's kind of a ploy that Palpatine uses to bring people into his inner circle. You know, as far as the name itself goes, I scratched my head a little bit, but then I just moved on. It was, you know, something from George, and okay, that was it.
And it's not like the other Star Wars names are Bill or something like that.
You know, I think there's just been so much speculation. And so much, you know, so many names advanced. You know, granted, they're probably names that roll off the tongue more easily.
Sure.
I think people, and you know, with Palpatine being such a, you know, sort of Latin name, that people were looking for something like that. The real question now is, what was George thinking when he came up with it?
You know? Wow.
And there's some cool things that can be done, because we don't know Palpatine rejects it. So why does he reject it? What does that name mean on Naboo? Why did his father give it to him? I mean, there's a whole backstory that could be explored in terms of why he rejected it.
And I believe so. Isn't there some etymology to show that she means sort of like splitting or dissension, things of that nature?
Yeah, I mean, if we go by, right, it can mean that. You know, it does have that similarity to Shiv, that's, you know, the prison term. Maybe someday somebody will pin George down and find out exactly
right. Well, heck,
why he chose it.
Sure, and maybe the next time we have him on for a cup of coffee, we'll ask him.
Ask him and let me know.
I will. I'll send you a message.
All right.
Well, Jim, as fans know, Tarkin comes out November 4th, and you're eagerly awaiting to get their hands on it, and I hope that they all get out and check it out and pick it up. And we're excited to wish you luck on this project. But we're excited, too, as, you know, you'd roll in. I know authors always kind of trying to work on that next project and on the side and get that rolling. So we're excited to know if you have anything coming out that's following Tarkin, Star Wars, or maybe something that you're coming out with on a different series or something of your own.
Actually, I don't have anything in the works right now. I've got plans to do some traveling here and there to catch up with people that I haven't seen for a while. So, I'm not working on anything, Star Wars or otherwise.
Wonderful. Well, a well-deserved vacation. Sit back and reflect. Are you a writer that when your work has been published, do you go back and revisit it and just sort of think about what you enjoyed or what you would tweak, or are you just kind of stay away from it?
I can't do it. I know sooner. I sooner send the manuscript off, to my publisher, than I'm already thinking about, I should have done this differently. Why didn't I include this? So if I went back and read through my books, I would really be taking a red pencil to probably every page and questioning some of my own decisions. You know, I'd be like that painter that sneaks into the museums at nights and, you know, touches up his or her work. You know, just the green wasn't quite right, or, you know, the red needs to be brighter here. So, so I don't delve back into them.
Interesting. Well, even if you did decide to, there literally wouldn't be anything to tweak, because I think that Star Wars fans will just absolutely love your Tarkin. It's a tremendous book, and I can't wait to see the reactions as people read it. And the early buzz, the early reviews, I know I put my review out a few days ago. Everyone seems to be absolutely loving it.
I hope you're right. I mean, that's great. That's great. I'm thrilled if this book, if people get something out of this book, they find it entertaining or answer questions or whatever else.
Most certainly. So now, Jim, we've come to the time of our show, and it looks like your coffee's getting low. So we'll ask you our five questions that we ask every guest on Coffee with Kenobi to sort of show how much we all have in common with one another. And we'll start with the first one. What is your favorite Star Wars movie?
Empire Strikes Back, which is probably you hear quite a bit.
Oh, I think if we had we should do a tally. But yeah, it's cool. Definitely the top one, followed closely by Revenge of the Sith, actually.
Yeah, it's true.
But by Revenge of the Sith? That surprises. Well, let's see. Yeah, I guess so.
I think it might be.
Not even A New Hope, huh?
No, I think it's generational, actually.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, A New Hope will always, you know, have a special place for me. I just...
Absolutely.
I think it's my favorite movie because it skewed a little darker. It had great dialogue. It had so many wonderful scenes, so many cool revelations. Only thing that lessened it for me is my close friend Brian Daly, who was working on Han Solo novels back then.
Oh yeah.
Knew early on that Vader was Luke's father, and felt compelled to tell me before. Right. Ruined that little surprise.
Oh, my.
But I think that would be my favorite anyway.
The ultimate spoiler. Mm-hmm. That's good. So, Jim, who's your favorite Star Wars character?
You know, I'm going to go with the Emperor, just because I've spent so much time with that character in the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's just so much more to be done with him.
I agree with that. I wish we would have interviewed you when Darth Plagueis came out, because there's all kinds of that's actually literature. It's a wonderful book. Oh,
thank you. That's a great compliment.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, I'm a sucker for a loquacious vocabulary, so I'm very, very, very much enjoy that. So, speaking of vocabulary, what is your favorite line of dialogue or film moment?
In Star Wars?
Yes.
Well,
we never said we'd make it easy.
I actually like that Han Solo line about having been from one end of the galaxy to the other, and I wish I could quote it quote it word for word, but never seen anybody directing my fate. I wish I could remember the line. I'm sorry.
No,
I think you know the one I'm referring to.
Absolutely. I've seen a lot of strange stuff. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, Jim, if you collect, what is your favorite collectible that you own?
You know, I do not collect. I don't collect. I have a lot of Star Wars toys that I bought for my kids over the years. You know the ones that I actually like the most are these little, I think they were like, maybe micro machines. They were like miniatures.
Mm-hmm.
But I, for some reason, I really like those. Of all the Star Wars paraphernalia that's still in storage, like in the garage. I like those little figures and little ships that were produced.
They're cool, and there was a limited run of them, and they're just so easy to display. So that's I love those.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
So what particular messages or themes about the Star Wars saga resonate or speak to you?
Well, to me, it's, it's the myth of the hero's journey, the reluctant protagonist who gets kind of dragged into a quest that he has very little understanding of in the beginning of his adventure, and just the unfolding of that path and the knowledge that's gained along the journey. I've always been a sucker for that.
Yeah, that's the thing that I think draws so many people together. Everybody wants to believe that there's something great out there planned for them. So I agree. Jim, it certainly has been wonderful having a cup of coffee with you. Before we let you go, how can people get in touch with you if they just want to say hello or ask you a question?
They can write to my email address, which is pretty much out there. It's just jlucino@aol.com.
Okay, very good. No Twitter presence right now?
No, and no Facebook presence either.
It probably makes your life a lot simpler, I would
think. Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, it would be tricky to try and monitor all that stuff.
It is. It can be certainly arduous, but a lot of fun. And Jim, thank you again so much. Be sure everyone.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate I really appreciate all the compliments. I'm really thrilled that you guys liked the book. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Really.
Absolutely. And everyone, November 4th, be sure to go to your local bookstore or go to our website or Amazon.com and be sure to purchase Tarkin. Jim Lucino, thanks again so much. Have a great night.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Jim. Bye.
Chewie, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date on our Twitter feed at twitter.com/coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, download the album Eye to Eye by Steve Torok on iTunes.
Give the evacuation code signal.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here.